Tuesday, July 9th. Today in Vichy, France, the French Parliament meets to pronounce its own death sentence. And by tomorrow, France is expected to have a semi-totalitarian government on fascist lines. A new slogan, Labor, Family, and the Fatherland, is to replace the traditional liberty, equality, and fraternity. German air raids are continuing on the British Isles, and British planes are retaliating on German and German-occupied lands. Now the news direct from Europe, Berlin, London, and Rome. First, the reports from the German capital.
This is Berlin. German interest today is pretty well concentrated on France, on the little health resort town of Vichy, where the old French Parliament is scheduled to save the democracy and make France join the ranks of the totalitarian powers. According to the German press, all plans have been completed at Vichy for the quiet burial of democracy. Last night, say German dispatches, Marshal Petain's cabinet met under the chairmanship of President Lebrun and approved the plans for the new French constitution, which is to transform France from a democratic state to an authoritarian one under the slogan of Work, Family, Fatherland. This slogan presumably replaces the one sacred to France since the revolution, liberty, equality, fraternity. German dispatches reveal that at last night's meeting of the French cabinet, Mr. Laval was entrusted with presenting the proposal for a new constitution to the French Parliament. It has been Mr. Laval, one gathers from German press accounts, who has been the prime mover in the historic change which the French government of Vichy seems about to make. The German papers take it for granted that France's transition from a democracy to an authoritarian state will be made without a hitch. Today, the Chamber and the Senate will meet separately at Vichy. Tomorrow, both houses will constitute themselves as the French National Assembly. The Assembly will then, according to the papers here, give Marshal Pétain a vote of confidence, empowering him to draw up an authoritarian constitution. Mr. Laval and his colleagues will then do the rest. Democracy has certainly met its death very rapidly in France. In the meantime, we appear to be in the midst of one of those brief pauses in Germany when everyone snatches for their breath. The pause, I think, will be brief. Probably before the week is up, events of importance will be taking place. As to the expected attack on England, there is no indication here of when it may begin. Such things, of course, are military secrets, and we wouldn't give you any dates even if we knew, which we don't. Most people you talk to in Berlin seem to think that England will be as easy a pushover as France was, though the military writers and their articles in the daily press seem to think it's a more difficult job because of that open stretch of water between the continent and the coast of England. With all the small countries of Europe jumping on the German-Italian bandwagon, talk about the reorganization of Europe continues here. Count Ciano, when he returns from his tour of the Western battlefields, we saw the Maginot Line in the Verdun Fort yesterday, is expected to have further talks with Herr von Ribbentrop and perhaps with Herr Hitler about the future course of events in Europe. And now for some smaller items of news here in Berlin. Field Marshal Goering has ordered that there should be no more air raid alarms when only single planes come over German towns. This is being done, it's explained, so as not to disturb economic activity any more than is necessary. In this connection, the Ministry of Labor has laid down new rules about payment of workers for time lost during air raid alarms. When possible, says the decree, working hours lost when the airplanes come over will be made up by extra hours of labor, so that the worker doesn't lose his full wage and the employer is full production. When extra hours prove impossible, the employer must pay for lost time during air raid alarms from 50 to 90% of the worker's wages, depending upon how many children the worker has. In some cases, the state will contribute to the cost of paying the workers for this lost time, so that the employer will not have to carry the whole load. It's announced from The Hague today that the Dutch will now institute a system of food rationing. The German commissioner in Holland promises the Dutch people that in regard to this food rationing, they will have the same rights and duties as the German people. The Armistice Commission announces that all German prisoners of war have now been released by the French. The German army delegation will now go to the unoccupied areas of France to see if there are any still German prisoners about. This is William O'Shaughnessy in Berlin, returning out of Columbia, New York.
Here is a press association dispatch from Shanghai. A Japanese embassy spokesman said today that Japan would demand an apology for the arrest of 16 Japanese gendarmes by United States Marines. He also intimated that rejection of the demand might affect the whole course of Japanese-American relations. Now back to Europe for news reported from the British capital by Edward R. Merrill. Go ahead, London.
This is London. Early this morning, two more German planes were destroyed over England. This brought the total of German aircraft shot down over these islands to 129. Of this figure, 62 planes, just under half, have been accounted for in the last fortnight. 2 weeks of the most persistent reconnaissance and bombing attacks that England has ever known. During this time, the visits of German aircraft exceeded in number the entire total of raids during the 4 years of the last war. Between 1914 and 1918, the British coast was crossed only 51 times by bombers and zeppelins. During the short period of darkness last night, German planes reconnoitered a number of districts, but only a few bombs were dropped. And from the few casualties reported and lack of material damage, it is assumed that the bomb loads were jettisoned when the raiders encountered Royal Air Force fighters. It is announced this morning that mercantile tonnage lost through enemy action for the week ending July 1st represent 6 British ships, the total tonnage of 30,377 gross tons. The British Navy has accounted for the Richelieu, France's new 35,000-ton battleship, one of the most powerful warships in the world. It was announced that the action took place early yesterday, but no details are available. The Richelieu was the pride of the French fleet, and there was a report last week that she was in the Atlantic, running trials. Syria remains an important question mark. The frontiers of this French colony are closed. No foreigners are allowed to enter. Telephone, telegraphic, mail, and radio communications have been cut. The British military mission has been told without ceremony to get out of the country. Both the Germans and Italians are reported to be sending agents into Syria. And the British forces in Palestine are watching the rapidly developing crisis in Syria, which it is believed must reach a showdown in the immediate future. The London Times, in a long and closely written editorial this morning, forecasts the future of France. France, it says, will be in all things subservient to German policy. Her resources will be absorbed into the German war machine. She will produce armaments for Germany, food for the German army and the German people, and ultimately will be forced to abandon her industrialism and become once more a land of peasant agriculture. British strength, say the Germans, has rested upon her position as the center of the world's industrial production and her use of non-industrialized colonies and subject territories overseas as her market for granary and her source of raw materials. The German dream is to do the same thing on the continent. Germany is to be the great industrial military power in the center of the continent. The rest of Europe is to be her colonial territory, which will feed and supply her, be a market for German products, but which will not be allowed to industrialize itself in competition with German industry. This plan, says the Times, dovetails with the thinking of men like Marshal Pétain and General Weygand, the royalists and the men on the extreme right, who have always counted on the Catholic peasant to save France from the turbulent and free-thinking industrial worker. Britain has protested to Sweden over the Swedish decision to allow the transport of German war materials and German soldiers across her territory. No one expects the Swedes to alter their decision as a result of the British protest. But the Swedish Foreign Office has flatly denied that Sweden is about to link herself with Germany and become the northern knob on the Axis. Last night, Admiral Sir Barry Domville, former chairman of the Link, a pro-Nazi organization, one-time chief of staff of the Mediterranean Fleet, and director of naval intelligence, was arrested and imprisoned under the defense regulations. He is now in Brixton Prison. His wife, Lady Domville, was also detained. According to this morning's Daily Express, Major Quisling, the notorious Norwegian fifth columnist, has found that his treachery didn't pay. All it has brought him is a job as a local Norwegian radio commentator. He is now doing broadcast from Oslo, trying to get the Norwegian people to settle down under Hitler. The Express implies that Major Quisling, as a radio commentator, has indeed reached a low station in life. I return you now to CBS in New York.
This is New York. That was Edward R. Murrow reporting from London. Columbia takes you now back across the ocean to the Italian capital for the latest news reported by Cecil Brown. Go ahead, Rome.
This is Rome. Italian troops launched another attack in the Anglo-Egyptian Sudan near Kassala. The fascists are using Fasada, which is near the Ethiopian border, as the jumping-off point for further penetration into the Sudan. The war communique issued an hour ago reports the attack was against Kurma in the Kosovo region. It was preceded by an air bombardment, and it's announced that a radio station and stores were destroyed. The fascists made two air raids on British bases in Kenya. The high command says that at Wajir, a munitions dump was blown up. In the Turkana zone of Kenya, some British prisoners were taken. The high command claims that in the past few days, at the Libyan-Egyptian border, no fewer than 50 British tanks have been destroyed. The first casualty names were published today, and the list showed 775 killed on the Alpine Front. The wounded total 2,982, and 315 soldiers are missing. There were also 43 killed in East Africa. No time period is given for this number, but it's presumed it covers from June 11th to June 25th, when the war with France ended. The list does not include the deaths of airplane crews or those of ships and submarines. Italy has officially announced the loss of 24 planes, one destroyer, and three submarines since the war started. There has been daily ground activity at the Libyan-Egyptian border and at the border between Ethiopia and the Anglo-Egyptian Sudan. The announced figure of 818 dead does not include the casualties in those engagements. Foreign Minister Chano is on a tour of Germany's Western Front and the occupied territory. The fascist press makes no comment on the details of his talk with Hitler and von Ribbentrop, except that the future military and political course of Europe is being decided. Well, it appears from here that at least the fate of France is being decided, and perhaps that of Southeastern Europe as well. Chano resumes his talks in Berlin tomorrow, and said here that an agreement may be reached to make certain offers and promises to France to induce her to declare war on England. That act would enable the Axis to use the remainder of the French fleet. One of those promises may be that France could keep some of her colonies after the war is over. However, the newspaper Il Tempo, which often expresses Chano's views, says today France is a vanquished nation and cannot become the military ally of the Axis. The Battle of Orléans, it says, was just an episode. A further sign that Hitler, Chano, and von Ribbentrop had their scissors out to redesign half of the Balkans came this morning in a dispatch from Budapest. The Rome newspaper Il Messaggero reported that the Hungarian Prime Minister Tereki and Foreign Minister Count Sassi are on their way to Berlin. Days ago, the Rome newspaper said they were not going because a conference of Ribbentrop, Chano, and Sassi would appear to be an anti-Romanian meeting. Apparently, that impression is no longer feared. And it may be that Hungary's hungry appetite for Transylvania will soon be satiated. This is Cecil Brown in Rome, returning you to Columbia in New York.
Here in New York is the latest news from the Balkans, received at Columbia's newsroom. Premier Teleki and Foreign Minister Csaky of Hungary will fly to Berlin this afternoon. They will join Adolf Hitler and Italian Foreign Minister Chano in diplomatic talks. This was made known this morning in the Hungarian capital. News of the Berlin conference tended to relieve the tension of the last 10 days when it was feared Hungary and Romania might go to war. And with this news, we conclude this morning's report of European developments. Reported from Rome by Cecil Brown, from London by Edward R. Murrow, and from Berlin by William L. Shirer. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.